Bridgebank helps breakthrough ideas actually break through and remains dedicated to providing financial solutions to the risk takers, the game changers, and the disruptors. Bridgebank, a division of Western Alliance Bank. Bridgebank, be bold, venture wisely.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mindshift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
I'm Erica Cruz Guevara, and welcome to The Bay, local news to keep you rooted.
We'll hear argument first this morning in case 23-175, City of Grants Pass versus Johnson.
This week, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in what's been described as one of the most significant cases on homelessness in decades. The case, Grants Pass versus Johnson, all started in Grants Pass, Oregon, where supporters say that local authorities should be able to criminally punish people for sleeping outside.
Council, what will the city do if you don't prevail here?
The city's hands will be tied. It will be forced to surrender its public spaces as it has been. Unfortunately,
folks here in the Bay are watching this case closely, including unhoused people and advocates. And on Monday, about 100 people marched from San Francisco's federal building to City Hall.
Well, we're here to stop the illegal pushing and shoving of the homeless. I am homeless, and it really hurts, right, to think that your existence is now against the law. So we're all here to assemble against that.
Today, how the issue of homelessness wound up in the Supreme Court, and why so many people in the Bay are paying attention to this case.
I would say a lot of the observers I've talked to say this is just the most significant case about homelessness that we've seen in a long time.
Vanessa Roncagno is a housing reporter for KQED.
The question of how to deal with encampments is super contentious. And that's really the issue at the heart of this case, is how far can cities go in policing homelessness?
The Supreme Court heard oral arguments this week. Walk us through some of the basics of this case and why it got brought forward to the Supreme Court.
So it comes out of a small town in southern Oregon called Grants Pass, where unhoused residents sued the city over local laws that prohibit sleeping or camping in public back in 2018. So about a decade ago, the city started getting more aggressive in terms of how it polices homelessness, and they passed these ordinances that outlaw camping in public parks and sleeping outside. Under them, unhoused people can be fined almost $300, and those fines can pile up to over $1,000 and can escalate into short jail sentences. At the same time, this city has really limited shelter options that most unhoused people in the city can't access. So the folks who sued argued that it's unconstitutional for the city to enforce those bans and jail or fine people when there's not enough shelter available. Like, basically, if they don't have anywhere to go, it's unconstitutional under the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. So the district court there in Oregon sided with those plaintiffs, and the Ninth Circuit agreed. The city then asked the Supreme Court to take it up, and here we are.
Okay, well, I wonder if we can just talk about where people are lining up on this. Vanessa, what are the different sides and arguments that you've been hearing on this case?
First of all, the city of Grants Pass is arguing that its ordinances are not unconstitutional. They say it's totally legit to put these kinds of bans in place and fine and jail people, that there's a long history of doing this kind of stuff. Beyond that, I would say their sort of broader argument is that the courts have overstepped and that they're stripping local governments of their autonomy to deal with this pretty thorny issue in the way that they see fit to do it.
Our hope, I guess, would be that this issue is taken out of courts and left for individual communities to figure out the best way to structure and enforce their camping ordinances.
One of the people I talked to about this is a guy named Devin Kurtz. He's the director of public policy for the Cicero Institute. That's a think tank that has actually drafted a lot of the model anti-camping legislation that's been adopted in states around the country. What he's saying is that the ruling in this case and related cases have really tied cities' hands when it comes to addressing homelessness.
For a lot of communities, there's concern that if they were to enforce their camping ordinances, then they could be subject to litigation.
That they're stopping cities from being able to enforce camping bans and are therefore a roadblock to addressing this crisis.
This is about enabling law enforcement to engage and to have an element of, this isn't a choice, you have to move, you have to go seek this. It's just sort of the threat of arrest. With a population that, again, is sort of on the fringe of society, that can be really important.
Mamanini argues that if the Supreme Court doesn't overturn these rulings, we're going to see homelessness increase around the country. On the other side, attorneys and advocates for people living on the streets in Grants Pass say that these lower court rulings are actually more narrow than cities are claiming they are. They're arguing that cities do still have leeway to regulate encampments and even clear them under these rulings. But what they can't do is just ban sleeping in public, camping in public, everywhere within city limits 100% of the time.
The question that's really being asked here is, does the Constitution protect everyone, or does it only protect people who have the luxury of being housed?
One of the people who has been making this case far and wide is Jesse Rabinowitz. He's the communications director for the National Homelessness Law Center. One of the things he argues is that punishing people for living on the streets isn't a solution, and in fact, it only makes the problem worse.
I disagree with the premise that cities' hands are tied. And it's disappointing to watch elected officials throw up their hands and say there's nothing we can do when they're not doing the bare minimum of funding the housing that everybody needs.
He and other advocates argue that these policies are expensive, they are ineffective, inefficient. People can end up with criminal records that they didn't have before, just things that actually throw up more barriers to getting out of homelessness.
But we have to be very clear that this is not about only legal technicality. This is about the 256,000 people who sleep outside each night in the richest country in the history of the world.
What other groups have lined up in support and opposition?
So many people have weighed in on this case. There were more than 80 friend of the court briefs filed from people all over the political spectrum. On the side of the city in California, we've seen sheriffs and police associations weigh in, the California State Association of Counties, the League of California Cities. We've seen national conservative groups, all of them supporting the city's position in this case. And then, siding with unhoused residents, you see big groups like the ACLU, Southern Poverty Law Center, other national human rights groups. Academics have weighed in on the side of these plaintiffs, and a bunch of California nonprofits, including the Western Regional Advocacy Project and other folks. Feels like everybody.
Yeah. Here in California and in the Bay Area, how about local leaders? How are they kind of coming out in support or opposition to this?
San Francisco City Attorney David Chu is one of the people who asked the court to take up this case and who filed a brief actually in support of neither party, which came as a surprise to some observers, which is actually what Gavin Newsom ended up doing and the city of Los Angeles and the Biden administration. They're not endorsing this extreme approach that the city of Grants Pass has taken, but what they are saying is that they want clarity about how to interpret these lower court rulings. They say they've been unclear and interpreted too broadly in some cases. For instance, to require the city to build enough shelter for every unhoused person in the city before you can enforce ordinances like this. And they say that's really impractical. So they do agree with this general argument that the court has overstepped and really stripped cities of the tools that they need to address homelessness.
Coming up, how Monday's oral arguments shaped up in the Supreme Court. Stay with us.
I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. Every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey. That's where you go to Sunshine State. But we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, what's up? I'm Erica Cruz Guevara, the host of The Bay. Donations keep independent journalism alive and healthy. And you support outstanding journalism when you support KQED. So if you haven't yet, check out donate.kqed.org/podcasts. That's donate.kqed.org/podcasts with an S.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, like cities nationwide, Grants Pass relies on
Monday, the court heard oral arguments. What happened?
So there was a lot of questioning aimed at distinguishing between status and conduct when it comes to homelessness. And I think Chief Justice John Roberts' questions really illustrate that.
A number of us, I think, are having difficulty with the distinction between status and conduct. You'll acknowledge, won't you, that in that those terms, there's a difference between being addicted to drugs and being homeless. In other words, someone who's homeless can immediately become not homeless, right, if they find shelter.
The city's argument that the courts have overstepped and that it really shouldn't be the courts making these calls, but cities themselves, that argument did seem to get a lot of traction with the conservative majority on the court.
This is an old question, but, you know, eating is a basic human function as well that people have to do, just like sleeping. So if someone is hungry and no one is giving him food, can you prosecute him if he breaks into a store to get something to eat?
On the other side, attorneys for unhoused plaintiffs argued that these citywide bans are tantamount to criminalizing homelessness itself, like the state of being homeless, rather than some kind of conduct associated with it, because sleep is a biological necessity, right? You cannot avoid that. And they point to this legal precedent that says it's unconstitutional to criminalize an involuntary status.
This is a difficult policy question, Justice Sotomayor. It is.
Where do we put them if every city, every village, every town lacks compassion?
I think Justice Sonia Sotomayor put it really clearly when she said, what are they supposed to do?
Where are they supposed to sleep? Are they supposed to kill themselves not sleeping? The laws against defecation, the laws against keeping things unsanitary around yourself, those have all been upheld. The only thing this injunction does is say you can't stop someone from sleeping in a public place.
What are the possible outcomes of this case?
So by the end of the arguments, it sounded like, big shocker here, justices were split along ideological lines. One option would be for the justices to uphold the lower court's rulings, or they could overturn these precedents and give cities the green light to cite, arrest, and jail people for sleeping in public, regardless of whether or not there's shelter available. A third option is for the court to take a sort of middle road that limits the scope of the lower court rulings. For instance, they could require law enforcement or the courts to determine whether an unhoused person being cited had access to shelter whenever a camping ban is enforced. I will say that the lawyers I talked to emphasize that there are many options here, that there are many possible outcomes here, and that this court is fairly unpredictable.
Well, I mean, given all of those potential options, I do wonder how this could affect us here in California, especially the Bay Area.
If the court sides with the city of Grants Pass, it's possible that we'd see more cities aggressively enforce camping bans that are already on the books and just weren't really being enforced. We could also see cities pass new bans. Other homelessness law experts I've talked to have pointed out to me that while the principle in this case is really important and Grants Pass's laws are extreme, there are a lot of different ways that cities can police public space. Already, cities have been finding a lot of creative ways to get around these lower court rulings by enforcing other kinds of ordinances or using other kinds of tools to keep people from camping in public space, like using fire codes or rules that have to do with waterways, rules that have to do with having, you know, more than a certain amount of personal property in public. And they point out that the constitutional right at issue in this case, right, the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment, that is not the only right that unhoused people have, and it's not the only one that is potentially being violated by city policies. So it's possible that we will see many more years of wrangling in the courts about all this.
And I mean, Vanessa, Bay Area cities and especially San Francisco have been struggling with these questions, right? Of like, when should cities be allowed to evict homeless people sleeping on the streets? And there is, in fact, a lawsuit in San Francisco about this very topic. Could the Supreme Court ruling actually affect what happens in San Francisco too, or no?
The San Francisco lawsuit is actually on pause until we get a ruling in this case. And that's because the city of San Francisco asked for that because some of the same underlying questions are at play in both these cases.
The case against the city of San Francisco is much broader than just the question before the U.S. Supreme Court today in Grants Pass.
I talked to Nisha Kashyap, who's with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area. She is one of the attorneys representing unhoused San Francisco residents in this lawsuit. And she emphasized to me that the majority of the legal issues in this San Francisco case are not under review in the Grants Pass case.
Case against San Francisco has 13 claims, only one of which is an Eighth Amendment claim. And so irrespective of what happens at the Supreme Court in this case, the case against San Francisco will proceed.
The suit isn't just about constitutional rights. It's also about whether the city is violating its own policies when it comes to policing homelessness.
San Francisco already has policies, including voter-adopted ordinances that require it to offer shelter to unhoused people prior to any type of criminal or civil enforcement. And so, irrespective of what the Supreme Court does in Grants Pass, San Francisco has its own obligations that it itself has bound itself to. It's that obligations that it says that are derived from values.
Well, when can we expect a decision from the Supreme Court?
Most likely this summer, by the end of June.
I mean, as a housing reporter here in the Bay Area, Vanessa, you've covered and are very familiar with local debates like this about how we should handle homelessness. I guess, what do you make of the fact that what started out as a local debate in a small town in Oregon has made its way all the way to the Supreme Court, that is now the place where we are having these debates?
Well, for one thing, it's interesting that it comes out of a small rural city, right? When we think of homelessness as being this urban problem, or we have historically thought of it that way, but it's now so widespread that it's touching cities of all sizes around the country. I think this just shows you what a pressing issue homelessness has become. There are now more than 650,000 unhoused people across this country. That is the highest figure we've seen since we started tracking this. Fully half of the country's unsheltered homeless population is in California. It's a major issue across the country, and it's an absolute crisis in California.
Well, Vanessa, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Vanessa Roncagno, housing reporter for KQED. Thanks as well to KQED reporter Sydney Johnson for the tape of Lamonte Ford that you heard at the top of this episode. This 30-minute conversation with Vanessa was cut down and edited by producer Maria Esquinca. Alan Montesilio is our senior editor. He scored this episode and added all the tape. Music courtesy of Blue Dot Sessions, NPR, and First Call Music. The Bay is made by me, along with
Alan Montesilio,
Maria Esquinca,
Ellie Prickett Morgan,
with support from
Jen Chien,
Katie Sprenger,
Cesar Saldana,
Maha Sanad,
Holly Kernan.
The Bay is a production of KQED in San Francisco, and I'm Erica Cruz Guevara. Thanks so much for listening. I'll talk to y'all next week.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. You get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.